Hey there, freaks. It's your boy Marty Bent here to introduce this week's episode of Rabbit Hole Recap. Man, I had a quick, condensed, hour-long rip. Really good stuff today, as always. I hope you guys are enjoying your Thursday afternoon, morning, maybe your Friday morning, wherever you are in the world. It's a good time to learn about the news going around in the world and in Bitcoin. This episode of Rabbit Hole Recap was brought to you by the Cash App. You freaks already know all about them. All right, they're helping you do many things. They're helping you stack sats, they're helping you stack stonks, and they're helping you save money at your local merchants, all right? I've been using the Cash App stack sats for quite some time now. They're making it easier. They teased last week they're making sats a standard, and they're adding an auto buy feature, so you're going to be able to DCA without even thinking soon. It appears Miles Suter works for the Cash App. He shared a screenshot of him buying 200 and some odd thousand sats on an auto buy feature. I haven't gotten my app yet. I don't know if you have. If you have, shout it out. So you got that feature. Now you can stack stonks if you want to. You can stack slivers of stonks if you don't have enough money to buy a whole stonk of your favorite company. Cash App's letting you buy as little as $1. And because it's hooked up to your bank account, you don't have to wait 4 to 5 days. You can start investing today. All right, Cash App Investing is a subsidiary of Square and member SIPC. And as always, make sure you don't forget to use the code STACKINGSATS. That's one word, STACKINGSATS. You're going to get $10. $10 is going to go to our good friends at Owls Lacrosse. It's stacking sats, one word. This episode of Tales from the Crypt is also brought to you by our great friends at Unchained Capital. Unchained Capital. They've been with us for quite a while now, and that's because they're building dope financial services for Bitcoiners, financial and custody services. I actually spun up a vault last week. The process is easier than I remember it the last time I did it. Use Caravan, check my redeem scripts, check my XPub keys, make sure that all the information I was entering was correct on my own, verifying it, not trusting them, verifying it on my own through my own devices, particularly my computer with Caravan on it. And what do you get in a vault? What is a vault, you may be asking? It is a multi-sig quorum that you enter in with Unchained. They hold a key. If it's a 2 or 3 vault, they hold one of the keys. You hold 2 others. You can use a Ledger or Trezor right now. They're working on Cold Card. You engage in that. You can always move the funds out of your vault by yourself if you have the 2 keys. If you ever want Unchained to sign the other key because you don't have access to the other one, they are there for you. All right. On top of that, they're offering their loan service as well. If you have Bitcoin in the vault and you need a little cash liquidity, you don't want to sell that Bitcoin, Unchained is there to help you not sell your Bitcoin. Friends, don't let friends sell their Bitcoin. Unchained helps you not sell your Bitcoin. You use your Bitcoin as collateral to get a US dollar loan. You put that Bitcoin up again in a multi-sig, and then they send you US dollars to your bank account. You can not sell your Bitcoin as long as you're paying that loan back. You're going to be Gucci. All right. Go to www.unchained-capital.com. Check out the vault. Check out the loans, and then check out their blog. They're doing incredible stuff. Parker Lewis, particularly with Gradually Then Suddenly, Dhruv, getting futuristic and analytical with the Space series and his HODL Wave series. Phil Geiger has been writing some stuff on there as well. And then on top of that, beyond that, they're doing some dope open source stuff. Caravan, which I mentioned earlier, is open source. If you want to do their multi-sig setup without Unchained, you can use Caravan to do that. They open source that. Working on Slip 39 and Hermit as well. Unchained-capital.com, www.unchained-capital.com. Enjoy this episode, freaks. I know Matt and I certainly did. Take care.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. Welcome back to an edition of Rabbit Hole Recap. Really rushing into this one, Matt. Matt just walked in, sat down, I hit record.
We got to move. Marty's got an appointment after this. We got to go.
An appointment before this, appointment after this. Busy week, busy life. Beautiful day out there.
Gorgeous weather.
Panic has set in New York City. Coronavirus panic is here, as evidenced by the Uber surge pricing this morning when I had to go to...
How much was the surge?
What should have been $20 was $62.
So it was like 3x surge.
At least, yeah. And somebody else responded to my tweet about it. $8 ride across town turned into $44, so that was 5x for him at a certain point in time.
And it was like not even rush hour, right? It was like what, 10 a.m. or something?
It was like 10:15, yeah. Unless people are just getting lazy going to work later.
Because people just don't want to go in the subways, I guess, right?
I think that's the theory. That's what I was assuming. So it took me 20 minutes to get one. At one point, the black cars were cheaper than the Uber X. I tried to get a black car originally.
That's weird.
They just canceled it on me. Yeah, the black car was like $52. The Uber X was $62.
Is it just a glitch?
No, I think just people weren't looking at the black car. And like the Uber X had just surged so much.
So should we be freaking out, Marty? Should we be freaking out about Corona?
Still very confused. I'm not ready to freak out. I saw a video of two of the people on one of the cruises that got quarantined. They were young, in their mid-20s, 25 and 24, I believe, or 26 and 24, and they were basically describing how they didn't even realize they had it, and they tested positive for it. So I think if you're young and healthy.
They just have like cold symptoms or something?
Yeah, not even. The girl said she had a sore throat, and the dude was like, I was shocked to see that I tested positive.
So like a bunch of us could have had it already and we didn't even realize.
Well, that's what I imagine is actually happening.
Because they're not testing anybody.
No. Like I think we've done 500 tests. The CDC's reported 500 tests. China's at 300,000. South Korea's at 100,000.
South Korea's been killing it with their drive-through testing. I think that's the coolest thing.
Yeah. And Australia, for a country of 25 million, has 10,000. We're a country of 300.
10,000 tests.
Yes. 10,000 tests completed already.
Wow.
And we're only at 500.
That says a lot.
As a country that's almost, or more than 10x the size of Australia. We have, what is that? 1%? Not 1%. 0.5%. 10% or 5%, excuse me, of those. That's my Marty math of the day.
What, 510,000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's 5%. I haven't been sleeping much. All right, give me a break. A lot to talk about this week. Good amount of stuff to talk about. Nothing too crazy, except what we're going to get to at the end. It's pretty, pisses me off. I'm happy you put that on the list. I saw that earlier this week.
Bullish week.
Very bullish week. Before we get into the bullishness, let's talk about some cool shit. I retweeted it over the weekend, and I followed along via the Periscope, but unfortunately I do not have a VR goggle, so I was not able to participate in this meetup, I guess we'll call it. But Udi, Werthmeyer, and a few others have been doing weekend get-togethers in virtual reality, talking about Bitcoin stuff. And last weekend was the biggest meetup to date, and it was a very organized, well put together presentation by Adam Gibson on PayJoin.
How cool was that?
It was so cool.
You like saw him in the front. You had like a presentation screen.
You saw all the attendees, like
laser pointer.
Yeah, and it was like a theater setting, so all the attendees were sitting down in seats, watching, raising hands, asking questions. I noticed Ben, the car man, our boy Ben, asked a question towards the end there. I think it was Schnorr related, but yeah, it's crazy.
I thought it was funny. One of the attendants was like, Adam, you need to speak into the mic so we can hear you better. It's a weird element to a VR presentation.
Yeah, I would like to have a video.
Virtual mic. You have to speak into like a virtual mic that's sitting on the stage.
Do you have to, or is he just away from his computer mic?
No, it wasn't his like computer mic. It was like there was a mic at the front of the stage that if you spoke into that, like all the participants could hear you better.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Holy shit. It
just seems unnecessary. Like the presentation person should just automatically be
getting all the audio.
Yeah.
It is crazy though. Especially with coronavirus.
Graphics are still kind of questionable, right?
Definitely, but they'll get there. It's like Nintendo 64 in the 90s.
I almost bought one. Did you look? Have you looked up the prices?
I have not looked up the prices, but I do want to buy one.
Because for like the longest time, you needed one that was like connected to a gaming computer, and you had all these wires, and they were expensive, and the gaming computer was expensive, and the setup was complicated. But like now, Facebook, you know, bought Oculus, and they have the Oculus, I think the Quest, which is a completely standalone headset. I believe it's like battery powered and it's got the controllers. So you just like install the software on the App Store, like the Oculus App Store, and it's completely standalone.
How much is it?
And I think it I think it retails to like $400, but on Amazon right now, because they're sold out everywhere, you have to pay like $550. There's a premium.
Oh shit! There's a premium on everything on Amazon.
Amazon's like completely out of all the Corona stuff.
All the prep stuff.
I saw like Purell was like 10x or something.
Yeah, I'm very happy. I think we said this last week. I'm not worried about Corona killing me. I'm worried about people freaking out about it. I'm very happy that we prepped earlier than it seems that most people are deciding to prep.
I feel like Amazon might be like a good stock right now.
Definitely.
Like this quarter, they're going to do fucking amazing, right?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Especially on their retail side where they usually don't make a lot of profits, that they're able to gouge prices. Supply and demand comes into play. Demand increases precipitously.
The market has been freaking out in general over the last week since Rabbit Hole.
I saw the S&P was down another 2.5% today after a slight correction. yeah, actually, we don't have that on this. Bless you.
I hope that's not the Corona.
Me too. Yeah, and you don't have this on the list. You should have this.
With the emergency cut.
Yeah, the emergency cut. The Fed came out Tuesday, I believe. Was it Tuesday? I believe it was Tuesday, yeah. And made an emergency 50 bip, half percentage point cut to their federal funds rate target, which is now between 1% and 1.25%, I believe. And again, they did this in a sort of abrupt fashion. People were expecting that when the FOMC meeting was going to take place, I believe it was the 16th or 18th, one of those two dates are in my mind for some reason. Consensus was that they were going to cut rates by 50 bips then, but it seems that they did not have enough time to wait until then.
Like 10 days from now. Right?
Yeah, yeah, 10 days.
So they just did like a midday cut.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I wrote about it in the Bent on Tuesday. They actually cut it while I was writing the Bent, so I was able to write about it that day. The repo markets, overnight repo markets, where the Fed gives banks and primary dealers who have access to the Fed window short-term funding. It was the highest funding to date. So they, I believe it was short-term, one day, got $100 billion in funding, and then the two-week funding gave out $20 billion. So in all, combination of one day funding and 2 week funding, they injected $120 billion into the short term markets.
Seems like a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. But even more telling is that it was oversubscribed. So they gave $120 billion to the primary dealers, and the primary dealers were actually asking for somewhere around $180 billion. Between the 1 day and 2 week funding. So they were 50% oversubscribed for that. So to me, it means that a lot of people are looking for money. And obviously, I think it's probably because
for liquidity, right?
For liquidity, short term liquidity. It's a huge debate. Like, what is it really liquidity? Is it just funding? In my mind, it's liquidity. They needed that. Or
people think Bitcoin's complicated.
Yeah, exactly. So people need money. They needed it fast. They needed it urgently. Some people didn't get the money they needed. And then hours after that repo market closed, the markets opened, Fed cut rates by 0.5%. And then that night, still Tuesday into Wednesday, they did another, at least one day, I didn't check the 2 week, 1 day funding, got another $100 billion injection, which is two of the highest overnight repo days. The two highest overnight repo days we've seen to date.
In history.
Yes, I'm pretty sure.
Meanwhile, our bet is still in play. The market went down and up, but we're back where we're basically right where we were when we ended the rabbit hole recap.
We're at like 30.
3,020, yeah. On the S&P, and 3,000 is our over-under.
Yeah, getting close. I'm actually getting more confident. So that's what I wrote in the bet. Like a Fed, and that was on Monday, when consensus was that they're going to cut rates on the 16th in reaction to the slowdown of coronavirus, or the slowdown caused by coronavirus, or some people would like to say, the Fed cutting rates is not really going to help in this situation. This problem is more systemic than providing banks with liquidity. This is coronavirus is really highlighting the inefficiencies, the what's the word I'm looking for? where our supply chain falls short. We're heavily dependent on China, and
for everything.
That's why we don't have a lot of tests. That's why we don't have a lot of medicine.
Masks.
It's really highlighting that we've basically created a fragile supply chain, heavily dependent on China. So that's not good, I don't think. And I think people are starting to wake up to this too. Like, holy shit, how could we get to this point? And that's basically
been... It makes us super vulnerable.
Super vulnerable. It's the search for low-cost labor, centralizing the supply chain in China was advantageous for us for a while, but you have something like the coronavirus come, fuck that up, and it leaves us fucking laying naked. It's not a good situation. I think we're going to start to see a lot of manufacturing shift actually to Mexico.
It's interesting because, like, a lot of people have, you know, a nationalistic view on the world, their perspective. Like, for Americans, they have American-centric viewpoints. But this case is, like, a perfect example where something's happening in China, and it has ripple effects to us because we have so much manufacturing over there.
It's not even a ripple effect. It's a tsunami effect.
But it's, like, it's no different. Like, if there was... like a major disaster or something in Georgia, the state, like Americans all around the country would immediately think that was a concern, right? But when something happens in China, they're like, oh, well, that's just China shit is happening. It's unrelated to me. But it's not. But that's their perspective. That's like how they frame it when they think about things.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it affects us pretty heavily, as we're finding out. Like there was... somebody on Twitter, Horse Whisperer, H-O-A-R-S-E, Whisperer. I don't know what he or she does for a living, but they just wrote a little tweet storm. They were at a local pub on the West Coast, and they happened to be sitting down next to somebody in the shipping industry who explained to them how shipping works, and basically the way the shipping industry works in America is they get stuff shipped from China on these huge... carriers, and then they empty it on the West Coast.
Because of the Jones Act.
Yes, and then they use those carriers in what's the word I'm looking for?
Domestic shipping after that.
Yeah, what are the things that they put the stuff
storage in? Storage containers.
Yes, the containers. They use the empty containers and fill it up with stuff that they then ship around the country. And this person in the shipping industry said come mid-March, there were going to be no more ships coming from China to unload and then use those carriers to send around the country. So we may see the full effect of this come next week, week after that. And in preparation for that, that absence of shipping, shipping companies were cutting workforces by up to 40%, which is pretty insane.
So, like, don't go crazy, freaks, but get a little prepared, cleaning products, stuff like that. Fever medication.
Yeah.
Canned food. Frozen meat.
Baby formula.
And you'll get stuff that you'd use anyway, and you feel less panic because you have a safety net.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the S&P is down 3.5% today, and Bitcoin's up 4.3%, blasting through $9,000.
Wait, but
that's a safe haven?
It was completely correlated last week, though. It's uncorrelated, right, freaks? And that's like, I had a bunch of people texting me. Shout out Lou. Shout out Buddy Loveless. He was texting me charts. Like, it's not supposed to be correlated to equities. It can happen. A couple days doesn't make a whole investment case, like, right? It's not indicative of the long-term correlation to these markets. Yes, they may be correlated a couple days, a couple data points may correlate, but if you look at the overall trend, Bitcoin is very non-correlated to the rest of the markets.
It makes sense that in, like, market panic days, everything gets hit.
Yeah, especially if there's a flight for liquidity, and people, especially on the futures markets, Bitcoin futures markets, like they've actually lost volume. And what I imagine is people pulling out their money from those markets, which are probably on the riskier side of their portfolios, to fund other other trades that may have needed some liquidity as the markets fell.
Yeah, I mean, and I would argue Bitcoin futures aren't really a safe haven asset.
No, they're definitely speculative.
Like the key properties that make Sats a safe haven to me involve self-custody.
The bearer asset, nature of it. Yeah, and then on top of that, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of retailers are overextended in Bitcoin. And
you see that fucking American HODL tweet?
How much
debt he's
like,
I'm carrying like $80,000 of the credit card debt or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like, did you read the comments underneath?
I read
the
threads.
It was so bad. Everyone was like, oh, I thought it was just me, you know?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Don't go into debt. Stay humble.
I'm very proud because we do practice what we preach. Like, I don't feel overextended at all. I feel very comfortable, even with this market downturn. Have enough cash on the sidelines. Do not go into debt to get into this stuff. Like, again, you don't know. Bitcoin price movements are pretty erratic, have been throughout time, and you never know what's going to happen and when you're going to need.
If you overextend yourself, you're going to panic sell the bottom. You're going to have to panic sell the bottom at some point.
Yeah. So be aware. Do not go into crazy amounts of debt. Just for anything.
Like, credit card debt is so fucking high interest, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you get over a certain point. If you get over like $20,000, that interest rate jumps to like 17%.
It's one thing if you're doing like the student loan Bernie put or something, and you're just banking on the fact that he's going to get elected and remove your student debt. It's low interest, you know.
That's not happening anymore.
Pay your minimum payments.
We got Senile Joe in for the Democrats, it seems.
FTX called it ahead of time.
Did it?
Yeah. On low volume, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a... I didn't even... Luckily.
Turns out the play on FTX was really to just short every single Democratic candidate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't see anybody... I don't see Joe Biden winning against Trump.
Probably not. Which would be bullish for Bitcoin, at least.
Yeah. Well, you were telling me this yesterday. What's the case for that?
Trump's just inept. They got too many things on their plate. Like, the last thing they're thinking about is Bitcoin.
Explain your Bloomberg theory, too. I really like this theory.
Well, the Bloomberg theory is the guy's worth $60 billion. So if he's worried about a wealth tax getting passed by Warren or Bernie, and he, at the time when he joined the race, it looked like Biden was... I mean, every week Biden has another flub or something senile ridiculousness happening, right? So he's like, I don't think they can handle it. They're not going to be able to stop him. I might as well spend $500 million to make sure the wealth tax doesn't get passed.
Yeah, sort of torpedo Warren and Sanders.
Exactly.
Not expecting to win.
Just not pay the wealth tax.
Yeah.
Right? Because what, $500 million of $60 billion
is 1/120th. So it's like less than a... Right, yeah, 1/120th.
Great math here at RHR.
1/120th. It's less than a percent.
But no. It's like 3% or something, right? 600 million is 1%, right? Oh yeah, so you're right.
Yeah.
Nothing. It's negligible.
The wealth tax would have been what? 25%
higher than that, right?
Yeah, yeah, way higher.
And it could have been yearly.
Yeah, exactly.
They got to nip that one in the bud.
Yeah. So
maybe it wasn't a complete lost cause for him, even though it looked really lame. Like he spent
$500 million. People are shitting on him.
He won American Samoa. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that might be. But that was some 4D chess he might have been playing.
Exactly.
Let's spend this $500 million, torpedo these campaigns, and I get to save some money in the long run. An investment.
It's all bullshit.
That's true.
Sats keep me sane.
Yeah, it is bullshit. Like, just look at how old are these fucking people running our country?
Super old. We need some younger blood in there.
Trump's what, 75, 76?
He's the youngest one, right?
Bernie or Joe Biden, 79?
Biden and Bernie are more older.
Are older. Yeah, what the fuck is going on? People just think. Just look at what's going on. It doesn't look great to me. But what does look good is the stuff that's going on in Bitcoin.
Dude, Whirlpool is fucking ripping it this week.
Ripping.
I don't have that on the list, but it's just been dominating my week.
On Saturday when I sent that tweet, we set the SAT standard out. It had jumped 28%. By the time I tweeted that out, you were like, that's way too low. It's actually up another 10% from there. So it was at like 500 Bitcoin volume at that point on Saturday. Where is it now?
We're 5 days into March, and we've already hit the same volume that was in January, which was an all-time high when it hit in January.
Boss. And
Five days into March.
I saw TD Dev, or Samurai Dev, excuse me.
I think it was TD Dev. Are you talking about the 4% of the mempool?
Yeah, 4% of the mempool with Whirlpool.
That's pretty crazy.
Right.
Fucking love that shit.
Maybe we'll get to that threshold.
You know, people talk about, you know, they concern troll about fees not rising. If you just have like steady coin joins happening all the time, that creates a baseline fee pressure.
Yeah, and then I had somebody concerned trolling that it's going to like drive fees too high. It's like, what do you want? Like, are their fees too low? Or are they going to be too high? The market will find an equilibrium. If people think the cost of coin joining the fee at a certain point is worth it, they will do it. If it gets too expensive, they won't do it. And then hopefully things like Shore Signature with SIG aggregation, which will not come in BitTaproot, but hopefully later, would help with that as well, aggregating signatures.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that tweet was that was a concern troll. I think it was just a concern. You know, like, I think he was, like, honestly concerned about it, which is, like, fine. Like, yeah, fees will rise. That's what I've been telling people. I've been anyone who says like, oh, I'm worried about fees not rising to the thing. I was like, just honestly, just wait a year or so and no one will be worrying about that. Everyone will be complaining about high fees. Like this whole idea that like we're not going to have enough demand to drive fees up is, I think, completely short-sighted. Fees are going to go up substantially.
Especially if people care about their privacy.
CoinJoin, Lightning, like you're going to need, you know, open, closed channels on Lightning. That's going to have a steady supply of block space needed for it, steady block space demand. And then CoinJoins is a constant process. So, and they're big transactions.
Yeah. I'm bullish.
Super, super bullish.
Price above 9,000 again? We got any Vegeta memes today?
Or are we trying to? Probably, right? I missed that.
I did too.
We gotta temper our bullishness because supposedly we dump whenever I'm super bullish.
Yeah, you just gotta be bearish from here on out.
I'm never bearish though, so we're just gonna go to zero.
This is pretty cool. Not all updated. It's got the new Ride the Lightning implementation.
Dude, the new RTL is so fucking sexy. RTL is like one of the most underappreciated projects in the space. Like all of Lightning. It is such an important aspect in the Lightning ecosystem to be able to run your routing node using RTL.
Yeah.
And so intuitive.
It gives you an incredible dashboard to know exactly what's going on.
Especially now. The new one is fucking sexy.
Shout out to Suheb and team building that out. Fucking crushing it, guys.
Major respect.
Major respect. Another cool update. My node updated with Dojo support. It's actually, I think this is finally the impetus.
Massive.
This is the impetus for me to get a Raspi and set up a MyNode. I think that's the next node I'm gonna make.
Yeah, I'm gonna do a MyNode within the next week. So I will report back. I've honestly just been waiting for my Casa Node 2 to come in. So why buy a new Raspi? I'm just gonna use that and
do what White Rabbit BTC did.
Yeah, the Casa Node 2 is just a Raspberry Pi 4 with an SSD, so it's exactly what you would use to build a MyNode. So you just flash use the SD card and you flash MyNode on it.
Yeah, and Casa's deprecating their node support. Deprecating the right word?
I don't know if they're going to keep supporting their node. They're just not going to release a new one.
Okay, that's what it is.
And you can imagine like features will get reduced, but they don't have Dojo. I just want to.
Whirlpool, baby.
Yeah. Because I have Dojo. But I already have Dojo, but I just... The whole concept of MyNode that you can run Electrum really easily, that you can run your own Block Explorer, all this different stuff, Dojo, Whirlpool, makes it very much like a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
And you can make them... You can build them pretty cheaply. So if the freaks are going to be setting them up and a lot of people are going to be using them, like I gotta play with it and see how it works and stuff. Because people are DMing me questions. I'm like, I've never used it. It looks good.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna get on it too, so I can start helping to answer questions as well. Sticking with Casa though, they added support to Cold Card this week, which is pretty huge.
Yeah, so now in their multi-sig, you can use a Cold Card, a Ledger, and a Trezor. So if you're in the 3 of 5, you could separate them between different hardware manufacturers. so you're less, you trust each hardware manufacturer less. If there's an issue with one device, your whole setup isn't compromised.
Yeah.
So just making Casa just even stronger of a multi-sig service, obviously with the caveat that they can see your balances. The other thing, just two quick things. Dojo is like awesome for Uncle Jim. This idea that you can just scan a QR code. So if you do run a Dojo, like consider hooking up your friends and family with your Dojo QR code so that they can run all their transactions through your node. And then the other thing is, I promised the Ledger guys that last week I was going to mention that they supposedly on Ledger Live, they don't send your XPubs. They send addresses, individual addresses they query, which is better in terms of privacy than doxing all your future and past transactions. So that's a plus that everyone should know. The other thing is, it came to my attention that some people didn't realize that you could use Ledger with Electrum in your own node. And yes, absolutely you can. You can also use Electrum with Coldcard and Trezor, but make sure you're running your own node. The hard part is Electrum server is kind of a pain in the ass to run, but my node supposedly makes it really easy. So just another reason why my node is a nice little toolkit there. And of course you could also use it with Wasabi, the hardware wallet integration with Wasabi. And not dox your addresses.
Yeah, shout out to my node, man. I can't wait to test it out this weekend. Or not this weekend, I gotta get all my shit first.
And there's a big update to Ledger Live too.
What is that? Like
Ledger software or whatever. They're supposedly gonna release full node support, so we'll see what that means, but they haven't yet.
Interesting. Sticking on Coldcard and integrations with Coldcard, Blue Wallet announced this week that they are now compatible with Coldcard after many iterations and a long time coming, according to them. So they their latest update adds Coldcard support and adds import-export transaction files for future broadcasts, which I assume has to do with the Coldcard.
So basically you can have like a watch-only wallet on Blue Wallet where you can see your balances on your Coldcard, and then you can build a transaction, you transfer it to the Coldcard, sign the transaction, transfer it back to Blue Wallet on your phone, and broadcast it from there. That's awesome.
Yeah.
The more integrations, the better.
Yeah, it's huge.
And I believe, you know, Blue Wallet is a weird one because it defaults to custodial on Lightning. But I think you can do non-custodial. It uses something called LND Hub, which I also think my node runs. Just keep coming back to that. But the on-chain portion defaults to non-custodial, and I'm pretty sure you can put in your own Electrum server for the on-chain. But if you're not able to, just, you know, keep in mind that if you're using their node, once again, you're doxing your addresses and your transactions to, in this case, Blue Wallet. But if you're not running your own node, regardless of what wallet you're using, if you're not running your own node, you're using someone else's node and they can see your transaction. So always keep that in mind.
Yeah. Beware, freaks. you got after BlockFi this week.
Put them on blast.
I'm going to push back. Explain why I put them on blast.
So they've been flagging Wasabi deposits. In their defense, they've been flagging them in the most friendly way possible. So they're like, send you an email, they're like, we know you deposited, we know you used Wasabi on the transaction you deposited, don't do that again. Like, it's against our terms of service, don't do that. But they haven't like frozen accounts or anything. So plus on in that regard, you know, BlockFi, I already had issues, the whole idea that you get interest on your Bitcoin and you give up custody, and you KYC with them for that process, always rubbed me the wrong way. Just like, not your keys, not your coins. The whole stay humble thing, like, you know, why do you want, like, how much Bitcoin are you going to keep in there? You know, are you really willing to risk it? You could lose at any moment. But this really cements it because, you know, I can't imagine the amount of interest someone would have to pay me to, one, take custody of my Bitcoin, and two, basically force me to reveal all my past and future transactions to them because I'm not allowed to use CoinJoin if I use the service, right?
Yeah.
I just would never use a service like that. That would never even cross my mind. One caveat to keep in mind is that pretty much every transaction I was sent that got flagged was when Wasabi was using the old fixed fee address, except for one, but it was part of a group of five UTXOs that four of them had used a fixed fee address and one was more recent. So like a lot of these UTXOs were like deposits that people deposited like 6 months ago and they just got emails from BlockFi about. So it'll be interesting to see that now the fixed fee address is removed, now that people are using Whirlpool and stuff, are they still going to keep flagging things? Like obviously you can still see coin joins on chain, but it's not as rubbed in their face because you don't have this immediate proximity to the fee address. So it should be interesting to see how it plays out. But like, you know, I mean, you should operate under the assumption that if you do coin join, you might not be able to send it into certain KYC compliant entities. But as far as I'm concerned, like that, I never have any intention of, like the only time I ever touch KYC is on the onboard. And that's, you know, you just buy and withdraw, which is still not ideal. But like the whole idea of sending into like KYC services and stuff doesn't really appeal to me. Like I have no desire to use those services. And long term, if we can't just spend Bitcoin without like doing like heavy chain analysis on everything, like Bitcoin's going to have a lot bigger issues on their hands than whether or not you individually can spend your coins.
Yeah. One thing I wonder about the flagging of this stuff too is whether or not, like if they do flag it, is it just like a checkbox that compliance has to check off? They ask you like, what are you doing? And you can just be like, hey, I'm just using it for privacy.
Yeah. I think a lot of them, like they just need a response from the user. You know, we're also seeing cases where, people pull from certain exchanges and on the withdrawal side, they get a question, you know, were you using Wasabi? Why were you using it? And they might just need you on the record saying, you know, that you were using it for privacy. But like, you know, that's also a concern of mine. Like if you can't, you should operate under that assumption that you could be cut off from these on-ramps at any point. This is one of the reasons why I believe in dollar cost averaging and not short-term trading, because you can't, you never know when the time might come where, you know, Mnuchin might do something or whatever, and then everything just gets cut off for you and you're not able to get back into Bitcoin. That'd be my biggest fear, is that like if I tried to make a short-term move and then the market started going crazy and I couldn't get back into Bitcoin, and just that would...
Huddle on, comrades.
It would just eat me up inside.
Yeah, no, I'm very much in the same boat there. Yeah, DCA, send to a coin join, send to cold storage. There are some services that I will use. I do use Unchained for some custody, but not substantial. Nothing too substantial, but an amount that I'm comfortable with.
But Unchained is an anti-coin join, so
yeah, that's true.
And they don't take custody, but they do.
They do know some shit about
they me. Know your transactions. They do KYC info.
Yeah.
So it's all like a balancing act there. It should be interesting to see how this all starts to play out. Like, where do you draw the line? How many hops is, are these services going to block any UTXO that ever had a coin join history? You know, like years ago, it's been coin joined. Like, where do you draw the line, right? So, it should be interesting to watch play out, and you know, we expect there to be a fight. Like, there's going to be a fight here.
Yeah, and hopefully developments at the protocol level make the fight less necessary and harder to fight for those trying to combat privacy. Time will tell. I'm confident things will get better. I think things are getting better, obviously, with Whirlpool going off like it has been. And 4% of the mempools, pretty material.
It is pretty cool seeing the demand for it spiking.
Yeah. UX provided. Like, make it easier. People will come. Build it and people will come.
Exactly. It's all about the UX, man. You got to make it. That's what Signal has showed us with like encrypted messaging versus something like PGP.
Yeah.
Like people just want a nice, easy UX.
Yeah, people are lazy. Speaking of UX, Square Crypto announced two new grants, one of which is going to somebody who's going to be focused on UX. Let me pull up his name right now. It's slipping my mind These are huge. Tankard Hayes is the recipient of one of the grants.
They both have really cool names.
Yeah.
And John Attack.
I mean, I wanted to get John Attack. I love John Attack. I think he's a freak. John Attack, particularly in the last year, between March 15, 2019 and today, is number 8 on the list of contributors to the Bitcoin Core repository with merges. So he's had 68 merges in the last year. And he's really focused on code review, which is a huge thing in Bitcoin. We need the code to be reviewed. That's something that John tends to focus on, and Square took notice of that and decided to grant him some funds so that he could focus on that worry-free and get paid for his hard work. So I want to give a huge shout out to John and Tankard Hayes for the work you're doing. Tankard particularly was previously working at Lightning. And it seems that he's going to be focusing on security, privacy, and UX.
Well deserved. And a big thank you to Square Crypto.
Yeah, shout out to Square Crypto.
They now have 4 grants, and they have the 5 devs that they have on payroll as well.
Yeah.
Fucking massive.
Moving it forward. And it was a big regulatory week across the world for Bitcoin. So we had 3 big announcements, India, South Korea, and Germany. 2 of which were good, and one that sounds good, but it's actually pretty bad. India is the biggest, best news. If you freaks don't know, India has...
I think India is the only good news. Both like South Korea and Germany feel like the bit license.
Yes, that's right. It's the other way around. 1 is very good, 2 are not so good. So in India, basically crypto exchanges were not allowed to get banking relationships. It was a case that went to their Supreme Court. And this is the first time their Supreme Court has turned over a case against this particular banking entity ever. And they struck down the Bitcoin banking ban. And so now crypto exchanges like Unicoin and others in India can...
Zebpay
can get back live and supporting Indian citizens, which just...
Well, now they can have fiat connections again.
Yes. And that's a pretty big, substantial amount of the world. Re-entering the
people. Yeah.
Even more than that, I think. Like re-entering the Bitcoin.
You got to imagine if you're an Indian right now, you saw the writing on the wall, you're like, fuck, they could just ban it again at any moment. You know, you got to get in while you can.
Yeah. So shout out to any Indian freaks out there. Hope you're having a good week.
But the South Korean German stuff was like being parroted as super bullish, but I don't think, they basically... It adds a level of legitimacy in both those countries for Bitcoin, but it also adds a shit ton of regulatory burden, which is what we saw with the BitLicense.
Yeah.
So it's going to make the cost to run these businesses, significantly higher, the regulatory requirements significantly higher. Yeah,
compliance burdens heavier. So in South Korea, they passed an amendment formalizing Bitcoin regulation in the Special Reporting Act is what they're calling it, an amendment to the Special Reporting Act, which makes cryptocurrency trading now legal. But again, the companies allowing that trading and facilitating that trading will probably be burdened with some compliance and regulation that upstarts may not be able to afford. And then in Germany, talking to our friend Hasu in Germany, and he said that this is actually pretty bad. It's definitely a lot like the BitLicense.
It's like the BitLicense. Yeah, the BitLicense is a perfect example of it. This is not bullish.
No.
The India shit is really bullish, though.
Yes, it is. A lot more people, too. It affects a lot more people than South Korea and Germany.
Well, the EU has just been, this is, first they had AMLD5, now they have this, and it's just, they're going to have AMLD6 coming up. Europe is getting worse and worse to run a Bitcoin business in Europe right now.
European freaks, fight back.
I wonder how many of these guys are going to join the Ripple board.
These unelected bureaucrats are really stifling innovation in your union. Is this going to affect England? AMLD6? We'll see.
Well, I don't know. England is like just as bad, if not worse. So
yeah.
Even if they're not part of the EU, I'm just... not very bullish on regulation over there.
Why?
I'm not very bullish on American regulation either, you know.
Yeah. Did you see that? You don't have this on this either. The IRS met with CoinDesk. Ripple. Or Coinbase, excuse me. Coinbase, Ripple.
Chainalysis and
CoinSquare, which is an ATM provider, I believe.
But Jack Dorsey was there too, right?
I think that was a different meeting. And I don't know if he was definitely there, but FinCEN met with some power brokers in the industry, apparently. That's Steve Munch and Butts and Krill.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe the Trump administration like drives us into the fucking, into hiding.
Hope not.
I'm still going to go with, I think they're inept. The longer Bitcoin lasts without major crackdowns in big countries, the stronger it becomes and the harder it is to stop it in the future.
Yeah, and
biding our time.
And the more people take their UTXOs into their own possession, the harder it is going to be enforced. So if you're sitting there at home with a bunch of Bitcoin on an exchange, and just nervous about sending it to a personal wallet, and you want to help the long-term survivability of Bitcoin, think about taking possession of your own keys, creating your own keys.
Take custody, then learn how to use your own full node with your keys, and then consider CoinJoin.
Yeah.
These are the steps, and it is a social thing. The more people that take these steps, the stronger Bitcoin becomes as a whole.
Yeah, and it
doesn't just help you, it helps Bitcoin as a whole. And if it helps Bitcoin as a whole, it should help number go up, which also helps you.
Yeah, it's the beautiful feedback loop. And as we've been talking about this whole episode, the tools for you to take the stuff in your possession and use it in a more private and more sovereign way are being built, and they're getting better every week. And so this is another thing, like, talking about like seeping Bitcoin into American culture, particularly came out in Bloomberg and CoinDesk this morning that a New York power plant is mining $50,000 worth of Bitcoin per day. I believe they have 7,000 machines that can consume 14 megawatts of energy a day up in the Fingerlings.
They said what, like 5.5 Bitcoin a day?
Yeah, about 5.5 Bitcoin. And this is, I think it's Greenidge is the power plant they've
is
been around.
Green Ridge.
It might be.
I think you spelled it wrong on the bend.
No, I think it's Greenidge.
Oh, you're right. It is Greenidge.
Yeah, Greenidge. And
weird name.
Weird name, but they have a power plant up in, again, the Finger Lakes in upstate New York.
Nat gas.
Was formerly coal, transitioned to nat gas, and is a peaker plant, I believe, that services its local grid. And I think the highest demands are in summer and winter when people need to cool and heat their houses.
Would you call it a beaker plant?
Peaker plant.
What does that mean?
It's a special type of a plant.
For nat gas?
Not just nat gas. It's very good at conserving energy, I believe, if you have excess energy.
I think what's really cool about this one is that... You know, we've seen a lot of third-party companies come in and partner with power plants for harnessing their excess energy. This is one of the first big cases, at least in America, where we've seen them do it, where the power plant's doing it in-house. It's not like a partnership.
Yeah.
It's not like they're leasing out. It's not like they're just selling a contract for cheap excess electricity. They're actually mining it themselves.
Yes, and
huge step forward in that regard.
So the plant is getting, there is like an upstream provider of the natural gas, but the plant historically has provided created the service to provide that gas to their local grid. And what's beautiful about this this story, which CoinDesk highlighted, is that the plant would be shut down for most of the year because there was just no one to consume this energy.
The demand was so low.
So the fact that Bitcoin mining exists and they're incorporating it into their plant allows them to keep the plant up and running year long, which means people are still employed, which means the leveling out of the grid and the energy distribution is getting more efficient, and it's just a win-win-win all around. If Greenidge is able to hold on to their Bitcoin, some of their Bitcoin, and doesn't have to liquidate everything they mine, and they're able to hold on through a bull run, it could be pretty lucrative for them.
Richest power plant in the world, possibly.
Potentially. We shall see. So shout out to...
I like to think they're hodling it.
I would like to think that too. They definitely have to sell some, I would imagine, to cover expenses, to pay for the gas that they're receiving. But it is beautiful to say, like I said in the bet this morning, do you hear the buzzing? Can you feel it in the air? That's Bitcoin mining coming to America. And this is going to help balkanize hash production and distribute mining more globally. Brad Glaringhouse was attempting to shit on Bitcoin mining. And like
Garlinghouse,
whatever his fucking name is.
Mr. Ripple. That's what he does. He goes around the world just shitting, you know, doing like alarmist climate stuff.
Yeah, so it's the dude like that was Bitcoin. Fucking at the IRS this week. Fuck this dude. Yeah, and
people see you, Brad.
People are still very confused. Like the quote in Bloomberg was like the amount of energy being consumed by the Bitcoin miners is enough to power 11,000 houses, the equivalent of 11,000 houses. And Christopher Mims from the Wall Street Journal came out and was like, is this the best use of this energy? It's like, well, nobody else is using it. Like, if you're paying for it, it doesn't matter. Like, if there was better use for that energy, people would buy it and price out Bitcoin miners.
Yeah, you've become like, I've noticed you've become like a Bitcoin is bad for the climate change reply guy lately. Like, yeah. Every time I see a poor take on it, I like scroll down, like I'm like, oh, should I reply? I'm like, oh, Marty already replied.
Keep up. Bitcoin is the real Green New Deal.
And then Pierre made an interesting point too. He's like, also like, fuck you. There's 8 million households in New York. Like, you're going to talk about 11,000.
Right. And yeah, that, and again, like Bitcoin mining is allowing that that facility to stay up and running year round, keeping jobs there too. I'm not sure how many jobs. May not be too crazy, but at least some people have some job security because of this. So yeah, I expect more of this to happen throughout the country, and it should be good.
If you care about America, you should support Bitcoin mining.
Yes, and so a lot of people, like Brad Garlinghouse, whatever his fucking name is, they fud about China having a bunch of the hash power geographically located within their borders. I'm not so worried about the geographic distribution of the hash power anymore. I'm more worried about the supply chain of the chip producers. We need a foundry here in America, here in North America. That is what I'm going to be pushing for.
Maybe Corona will help with that.
I think so. It seems like, again, I said it earlier, it seems like Corona is really having people wake up in a lot of the supply chain. I think Mexico is having a huge boon because of the trade war and now Corona. American producers are wisening up, like, hey, maybe we should bring some of this closer to home within North America's boundaries. And again, we're not nationalists here. We're just trying to be practical, right? This makes sense.
Yeah.
I love America. I do think it is falling into dystopian tendencies, but I do have hope that freedom will prevail, and the idea that America was founded on, will survive and will prevail at the end of the day. But we do have to fight for it. We have to stand up and speak up for it.
Yeah, talking about dystopian tendencies, as you so eloquently put it, we have the Earn It Act that is being proposed in front of U.S. Congress.
It's another
one of their fucked up names, like, you know, like the Patriot Act or whatever.
Yeah, Earn It stands for Eliminating Abusive and Rampant Neglect of Interactive Technologies.
How do they come up with this shit?
They say Earn It, and they're like, all right, let's just form fit what we're trying to do.
Do you think they start with the acronym?
Yeah. So this is brought up by Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey fucking Graham.
And I don't know Blumenthal's first name. Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham's trying to take your encryption rights away, freaks, all right?
It's not just encryption. So the internet's protected by something in the United States called Section 230, which means that internet service providers on the internet they're not liable for their users' speech. They should, you know, do a best effort, but at the end of the day, the user is liable for the speech. So you see this in like comment sections on Twitter, stuff like that. And they want to strip that protection away, basically force these service providers to police the speech on their site. And they have to follow like a commission of like 15 commissioners that are all like law enforcement agencies. And of course, in classic fashion. They're saying it's like, let's protect the kids. It's about kids and terrorism. But this has just been a common thing. The war on encryption has been going on for three decades now. It's gonna keep escalating. Like, it's gonna keep getting worse.
Speak up, freaks. Eliminating abusive and rampant neglect of interactive technologies.
So the encryption element,
fuck these people.
The war on encryption element here comes from, my understanding is that if you run like WhatsApp or something, like an encrypted messenger used by people, you know, questionable.
Probably not encrypted. Good it is.
But like, let's say Signal, right? If you the Signal Foundation that runs Signal could be liable for stuff that gets sent through Signal, even though it's encrypted. So then the question is, how do you handle that? And what it looks like they're pushing for is basically client-side scanning. So like your app filters through whatever you're sending before you send it, which clearly breaks encryption and has privacy issues.
Hey, Lindsey Graham, you can go fuck yourself.
But look, at the end of the day, like, even if they pass this thing, how, you know, this is why free open source software is so important. How are they going to be able to enforce it? It will hurt the average person, because the average person won't be able to be savvy enough to use encryption. But you're not going to be able to stop like free open source software from proliferating.
Yeah. It's where things like Urbit come into play too. Control your own data.
Still think Urbit's a shit coin. Get triggered every time you mention it.
But staying on the dystopian tip here, we're going to end it on a dystopian tip. Coinbase came out in the open that they were testing that facial recognition software that we talked about before, Clearview AI.
They didn't admit it. No, Clearview got hacked.
I know, it came out.
Yeah.
They just got caught
in the act that Coinbase was... Coinbase said they were testing it, that they don't use it.
Yeah. So the same company that hired a whole, what was the name of that company? The company that helped like jail dissidents and
Neutrino, right?
Yes,
is the chain analysis company, but yes. It was started by
Hacking Team or something.
Hacking
like
Team, Hacking Team. Right.
That's what it was.
Same guys then started Neutrino.
Yeah,
not to be confused with client side filters.
If you didn't have reason enough to delete Coinbase, they're trying to face fuck you.
This is so fucked up because it's like it sits outside the purview of the law because it's a private company, but meanwhile Clearview partners with all these law enforcement agencies, and obviously they can't keep their information safe because their whole client list got hacked. So all this data could easily fall in the wrong hands, whether they're a customer or whether they get hacked. It's fucked up, and they pulled all the photo information is all from like public profiles on Twitter and stuff and Facebook, and Venmo is a big one which no one really thinks about because your profile picture is public and it's connected to your payment methods and stuff. Slowly going down that path. It's here now, and it's not going anywhere. So the cat's out of the bag. We're gonna have intense facial recognition all around us. You're always gonna be watched and tracked. And
if you didn't have enough reason to get face masks because of the coronavirus, we're face fucked in many ways here.
You can't even get a mask if you want a mask right now.
Did you see Brian Armstrong's thread from yesterday?
Did you see my comment to Joe?
Joe Weisenthal?
Yeah.
No, what was it?
I didn't actually read Brian's thread because, you know, fucking whatever. I've been reading his bad takes for way too many years. Joe was like, it's pretty amazing that probably the most preeminent Bitcoin company doesn't think that Bitcoin will be the chain that succeeds or the token that succeeds. And I commented underneath, I was like, Joe, this is already priced in.
And they're not even a preeminent Bitcoin. I mean,
they're one of the most valuable Bitcoin companies, and Coinbase wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Bitcoin. Like, Bitcoin is whether they want to admit it or not, it's their golden goose.
Yeah, well, and he was making a huge thread on analogies, built on analogies with the expansion of the browser and the internet particularly, and really didn't even touch on like the underlying protocols. And again, analogies aren't ever the best way to make arguments, and particularly with Bitcoin. Comparing it to past technologies, because again, if this is a monetary good, there are different network effects and dynamics that come into play. And No, it's like Connor Brown. I retweeted him. Like, if you're really worried about bringing this stuff to Bitcoin or to this base, he mentioned privacy, scalability, transaction throughput. Like, Bitcoin's working on all those things. Like, you could put some of Coinbase's resources towards helping the builders out in that endeavor.
Look what Square Crypto's doing. Square Crypto's done way more for Bitcoin.
You have fucking Gollum. You have a Civic token on your fucking platform, dude.
Like Ox and shit. It's like all these garbage ass fucking tokens.
Go fuck yourself, Brian.
Bottom of the barrel.
He hates Bitcoin. This is somebody who pushed for Bitcoin XT, Bitcoin Classic, B2X,
Bcash,
Bitcoin Unlimited. He pushed for everything.
Ninja launch of Bcash.
Ninja launch Bcash. People yell at me when I call people enemies of Bitcoin, but I do earnestly, like, Bitcoin hurt Brian Armstrong's feelings at one point, and he's like on a vendetta.
He's just a hater.
He is a big hater, and it blows my mind, dude. Like, you could profit from this into perpetuity with the position that your company's in, but you just like to be all hand wavy, like, maybe the best hasn't come yet.
The good news is that we have companies like Square, Cash App, we have River Financial, Bull Bitcoin, that are like showing how it should be done.
Yes.
And they're nipping at their heels. So, Coinbase isn't going to be long in this world if they keep it up the way they're going.
Be aware, Brian. Be aware.
Just to wrap it up, I mean, we got to go, right?
We got like 3-4 minutes.
I have a couple of things I wanted to touch on. First of all, we kind of butchered the explanation of SharedBits's discrete log contracts. So you had them in the studio this week, so everyone should go listen to that.
Definitely
episode.
Go listen to that. They explain it way better than we did.
I'm like a half an hour in or 45 minutes in. So go listen to that. The other thing is I wanted to do a quick shout out. We don't have any shout outs.
No shout outs. No shout outs this week.
Get on that, freaks. Let's get some shout outs next week. I love the shout outs. I wanted to give a shout out to Sphinx Chat, which we've talked about in the past. It seems like they're rolling out more test access for users. So if you go to sphinx.chat, you can do that. And what's really interesting is now it's officially known, so it's a chat app where you can send Lightning payments between users, and every message is actually a one sat message. And not only can you send regular payments through it, you can also subscribe and send subscription payments through it. And what's really cool about the implementation is usually for a Lightning app like this to have basically seamless UX and like very user-friendly UX, like it ends up being custodial. But what they did is everything is run in the Noddle cloud. So each user has their own Noddle instance in the cloud that's running their own node that's running, and so it's like a hosted node instead of custodial, which I think is really cool. Obviously has its own trade-offs. There's still trust involved there, but it's a pretty cool setup.
It's badass.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sphinx.
Sphinx.
I'm trying to think of it. Yeah. Things are getting frothy. Coronavirus is a black swan. You were skeptical if it was a black swan, and I think it's a very big black swan.
It's priced in already, Marty, isn't it?
Everything's priced in. Keep an eye on the markets.
Added to the list of things that aren't effectively priced in.
A culmination of this virus shutting down the supply chains and the increase of subprime debt delinquencies that we talked about last week is going to be interesting, especially if the layoffs that were described earlier in the episode of the shipping companies hit first, and then that'll ripple through the rest of the economy. If those layoffs start and a lot of those people, blue collar workers, make up a lot of, large percentage of that subprime delinquency rate, I would only expect those to continue to rise. And then subprime is what started the last crisis, and it could be a weird snowball effect, freaks.
Yeah, I've thought we've just been sitting on a house of cards for the last 5 years, so eventually the cards will fall. Who knows when? Hopefully right after September, so I win the bet.
I don't know if we'll be able to wait that long.
I don't think our $50 bet is really what matters here.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I was talking to Rodolfo. You know, he's been fucking, him and the CoinKai team have just been killing it with the firmware updates. Like, all the different features they're putting on this fucking thing is fucking awesome. Like, I still am super bullish on CK Bunker. I just want to be able to use it with my Lightning node and with my coin joins. Like, it'd be awesome if I could link it up to Whirlpool and then you have like a warm wallet. But he said to, he wanted to do a shout out to the freaks that if you guys have any ideas for like firmware updates that you would like to see, shout them out on Twitter, you know, and he'll do his best to implement them.
Very easy to remember, at MVK. And then I believe he actually released a blog post recently with all the, upgrades from, update to update, just to make sure that people knew about the new functionalities that they have.
Yeah, I mean, they have a full change log on the site too, so yeah, they do a pretty good job with documentation.
All right. That was a quick wrap.
Oh, I have one more thing. Watford FC, they use BTC Pay server in their store. Fucking bullish.
For their, that's fucking awesome. For their Bitcoin suite.
The Bitcoin suite that costs 150 million sats for a game.
That's
1.5 Bitcoin.
They're stacking sats.
Stacking sats. Pretty cool that they're using BTC Pay server.
Very cool.
Almost, I think it's probably cooler than them having it on their sleeve, having the Bitcoin logo on their
sleeve.
And
they beat Liverpool 3-0 this week.
Fuck yes.
Not a huge football fan.
But now we are, when you have Bitcoin FC out there dominating, how could you not be?
Yeah, they're not going to be Watford FC for a while. They'll be Bitcoin FC soon enough. We'll make it happen.
I fucking love it.
All right, freaks. That was a condensed hour and 2 minutes almost.
Stay humble, stack sats.
Peace and love.